My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Right, we're back. Another week, another episode, another week with a new guest as well. So this is a first-time guest episode. We've got a returning guest as well from one of our newer cast who's been supporting and joining in as well. So nice to have some new voices, some fresh voices, and hear some great stories from these folks. So we answer a fun question as well. You really get to hear the opinions of some folks and really hear some like deep cuts that they have some passion and love behind. So we answer the evergreen question of what is a game you consider to be one of the greatest of all time? So I preface this with both the guests knowing that this isn't like a definitive, critical, like what is the general world consensus that it has to be a greatest of all time, but what is a personal game that we consider to be one of the greatest of all time. So fun to hear, fun to chat, and fun to listen in. So my first guest, Jason Dvorak from Game Rave TV on YouTube and game-rave.com. He runs like a PlayStation library site of the catalogs, you know, all the goodness, all the game collecting and variant hunting and he has a complete U.S. collection of all PS1 games, and it's growing into even more, and it's awesome. I've actually used his website to help cross-reference for some release dates and some game data for my 32-bit library books. That's actually how I stumbled upon him, was the power of Google that connected me to him. So that's turned into a cool internet friendship that's, you know, allowed us to collaborate, like I said, with the books. He's also contributed to them. So Jason's just all around good dude, good resource, good fun, good person to chat with. So I'm glad he's joined the podcast world and been able to be a guest on the show. And then on the back half, Luis Aguasilas is in the building again. I said it in the building, but there's no building. I accidentally said this in one of the episodes I recorded with Jason coming up too. There's no magic studio. This is not a building. People are not in physical presence with me. They're just done over the internet. So either way, Luis is back. He was awesome to chat with. I recorded like multiple episodes with folks all in one sitting just because they're kind of short bites and everything. And my entire conversation and afternoon chatting with Luis was really fun and entertaining. He's got some great stories and some great episodes that he'll be a part of. And I look forward to having him come back and record more as well. So that's it. Those are the two guests. That's the question. What's the game we consider the greatest of all time? And we had a lot of fun with it. The other business up front, I know I've been sharing my Patreon link. I would love it for a call to action. You can just definitely follow along and participate there for free. It is just a place where I've been posting some occasional writings, some behind-the-scenes stuff, and it's just like a umbrella outlet for all the stuff that I've been kind of putting together and doing. So if you have a Patreon account, it doesn't cost you a thing, and you can follow along with what I've been working on and kind of stay connected that way as well. I would appreciate any and all love and shares there. And if you do like what I've been doing here and you do like the projects that I've been working on, there is a paid tier to help be involved with like future books and future projects. But also there's a whole bonus podcast I've been doing called Single Player. So it's just even more podcast listening for gaming and retro gaming fans. So take a look at that in the show notes. And 32-bit Library Volume 4 will be available on Amazon, and I just reached out to Brian Rigsby from RetroGameBooks.com. He'll have copies of Volume 4 before Amazon has it as well. So please support him and Retro Game Books before you support the big corporations, unless shipping and all that makes more sense to go through Amazon, which I can't blame you for that. So take a look at that. The release date is actually going to be September 27th, which will be the date of the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I'll have a table up there in Portland. Nicole and I will be traveling up that way to sell some books and meet some friends and chat about games and have some fun. So that's all I got really up front. I really thought this was going to be the shortest intro, and it may have turned into the longest. So might as well tack on one more thing. If you're listening to this on your podcast platform of preference, please consider just dropping a little 5-star review or thumbs up or whatever rating scale that they use. That helps do things in their algorithms that show it to potential new listeners, and new listeners is a cool thing. I mean, I want to do this to help interact with folks, so that would help. And that's a easy and free way to help support me and the show. And if you know friends that might be interested in it as well, sharing the link online, that's really the kind of the biggest love and endorsement I could get. So hopefully you all have liked my ramblings and liked what I've been doing here. It's pretty low maintenance and fun for me to do. So I want to keep doing it, and I probably will still keep doing it, but you know, I'd like to do it to an audience who is having some entertainment out of it as well. So thank you so much, y'all. And we will see you again next week. We'll see Jason here in this first segment, and on the back half, we'll have Luis. So enjoy the episode. Bye. Yeah, welcome. Welcome to a new episode, or welcome to the show, period. Jason, I have a new guest alert. Jason Dvorak from Game Rave TV, and well, he'll introduce himself and kind of give us a rundown, but he is here for the first time, and we'll be recording a couple episodes together right now, so you'll hear him in the upcoming weeks as well too. But how about you tell us a little bit about yourself before I give you one of our icebreaker questions, Jason? Maybe a little bit about your history and just kind of what you got going on.
Sure. Yeah. So for those that don't know, I am Jason Dvorak. I go by Game Rave TV on YouTube. And then I have a website, game-rave.com, that within the last year I rechristened as PlayStationLibrary.com. Basically, I run a website that focuses currently on the American side of the original PlayStation 1, and I track variant releases. I cover reviews, screenshots, articles about that, and so forth. I've been literally gaming since I could teethe on the Pong machines of the late 70s and early 80s. And yeah, I am literally old man wizard in the gaming industry. I've literally been on the industry side. I've worked on the retail side for at least 3 different companies for like a combined 13 to like 17 years. Like, I've pretty much done it all except for like actually create a video game.
I was working on my book projects, and just the magic of Google like had me stumble across to your site. You just have like basically, I mean, the entire library cataloged there, release date information, like all of the cover arts and disc scanned. It's like a huge treasure trove for PlayStation fans and for history, like retro gaming history fans and all that stuff. So it was an awesome tool to kind of cross-reference with like the other like sites and sources that I had, and like old magazines and things like that. So yes, I definitely have much appreciated your endeavors and your need to collect and gather and be a giant resource. So I very much appreciate to have your internet presence there for sure.
I said I appreciate, because that means it means it's being used and I can feel better about myself.
Jason's also contributed to all of the 32-bit library books that I've done. He's been in all 4 volumes, I mean, that we've done so far, with just a couple articles and game write-ups and some own personal stories and everything as well too. So it's just been kind of fun to work alongside and actually work on things together as well. So cool. It's great having you on the podcast for sure though.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into it. Let's get into the icebreaker question, and then we'll ask the main episode question. But the icebreaker one, I haven't thrown this one out in a while, but I'll ask what is your favorite animal companion or sidekick in a video game?
Oh, God. that's a great question. I think, God. So, okay, so animal companion, or at least non, like, normal character. God, I would have to say probably dog meat in Fallout, like any Fallout, technically, would default there. God, you had really good questions. Yeah, probably dog meat from Fallout, just because it's fun to just, you know, like, you know, take down a bunch of raiders and blow a bunch of people up, and then just go over and pet them, throw some goggles on them, make them look cute.
That's fun.
I'm trying to think of like other games where it's like not another like fellow human character, and I'm not really either. I don't play enough games, or I'm not really picturing one, but yeah, I'd say dog meat for sure.
Yeah, the I've had a couple other answers to this, and I asked this like early on in the first like 10-15 episodes, and you'll be the third person to have answered dog meat to this one, which is just so crazy. That's just, you know, love for that character and that companion and everything, for sure.
Yeah, I would say if now that I'm thinking about it, if I exit out the realm of like newer games, Poppy from Samurai Showdown with Galford would be a close second, because I'm a huge Blanca fan, and there is nothing better than playing defense and just sending the poor dog out instead of you.
That's cool. All right. Well, cool. Thanks for stepping up to the challenge there. This one is also a great introductory question for people to kind of get an idea of some of your gaming tastes and kind of figure out who you are. So we wanted to ask for the main episode, or the main question for the episode is, what is a game you consider one of the greatest of all time? So this doesn't have to be like, you know, what is like critically and like like a general consensus of what the world thinks is the greatest of all time, but one of your games that you consider to be the greatest of all time.
Literally the Mass Effect trilogy, like hands down, bar none. I have never lost so much of my life and emotionally roller coastered through a game series like Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3. Especially Mass Effect 1. When Mass Effect first came out, I wasn't really big into, for like a better phrase, Western and European RPGs. And I was starting to fall off of Japanese RPGs, and my GameStop manager at the time pleaded with me for a year. Like for a year, every day we worked, like a year straight, pleading with me to just check out Mass Effect 1. And when it finally released to platinum hits with the bonus DLC, I was like, you know what? For $20, fine, I'll try it out. And I got home and I didn't do anything else with my life for, I think, a good 3 or 4 weeks. And when it was all said and done, I finished the game. Literally stood up in my chair, applauded like I was at like a film festival, recorded the end song to my DSi, drove to work on my day off, walked in, and my manager was like, well, did you finish it? And I opened up the DSi to have the song start playing, and he just laughed and went, does that mean you're going to reserve number 2? And I was like, special edition, baby, let's go. But yeah, just literally everything. Except for Mass Effect 1's broken currency system, like literally everything about that trilogy is absolutely perfect. And it just, from moral decisions, a variety of gameplay, from the choices you make in the first two games to get to the third game. Like I literally have every variant of every release across every console for the Mass Effect games, including games where I don't own the system they need to be played on, because I love it that much. Like, It's easily the best game/series of all time.
Wow. Yeah, I love the Mass Effect trilogy. I mean, I've loved all, like, 1 through 3 for sure. Number 1, I think it was interesting. Like, it was a similar boat. Like, it was released, and I also was, what's funny is I was working At GameStop as well at the time in Southern California. But when that was released, I'd originally, like, you know, I it looked interesting. I was going to give it a shot. And then, you know, like a couple of days from launch had kind of gone by. And then I was like, you know what? I'll give it a shot. I'll try it out. So I think somebody had like traded in a copy shortly after launch, like, but you know, which would occasionally happen, either people who had either stolen it or hated it so much and were trying to get like as much money back as they could, because it was a brand new game. But yeah, I played it for an afternoon and like maybe just like an hour or two and just wasn't quite hooked. And so I was just kind of like, you know, I thought I gave it its due diligence and I just was, you know, wasn't quite impressed by it. Just didn't quite understand, you know, what the draw was. And so I slept on it, did something on my day off or so. And then like the next morning I was going to head into work that afternoon and I was like, you know, let me give it another shot. Like, let me play a little bit more. If I like it, I'll keep it. If not, I'll just bring it with me and return it. Just something about like just being able to have like nothing else distracting me and just kind of focused on it. I was like literally as the opening was going by and every time there was a new codex entry, I was like reading it and like absorbing like all of like the side details. And I don't know why just suddenly then, but that just completely hooked me on the spot. And I was just like you, like I did not play or do anything else like outside of just like wanting to come home from work and just continue to pour more hours into that game. Like it was just a super good, just all around like adventure game that just made you think and wonder. And, but it had really great gameplay and also to back it up too. Like, I just loved that game. I've gone back and played it a few times, but, when they just did that, most recent Mass Effect trilogy, I think it was on what, PS4 and Xbox One, got the platinum trophies for 1 and 2, and I was working my way through 3, and something else I think came up and kind of took my attention away from it, but did like the full platinum trophy runs for 1 and 2 on PlayStation, and oh, I love those games. Those are fantastic.
I need to play through the modernized ones. When I was taking care of all my Xbox 360 stuff before the store closed, I had finally transferred everything over and I went to start the game and something happened with the save conversion for 2 and 3. And I lost all my save data, thousands of hours were gone. And instead of just going, oh, okay, I'll jump to the modernized versions, I was like, no, I have to have my perfection back. So I started playing the 360 versions again.
That's funny. So is number one your favorite out of the trilogy then? Is that the one, or do you just kind of lump them all as one?
I kind of lump them all together. I think one had the best kind of like world building. I'm blanking on his name right now, but the writer for that game,
Mac Walters, was that it?
No, he's the newer ones. I can't think of his name now. It's driving me insane. He understood the military relationship. What makes Mass Effect so much fun, specifically Mass Effect 1, is as the game is progressing more and more, you realize that, like, you know, you're still representing Earth and you're still part of the military, but your Spectre status kind of gives it a little like, nee, 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 like, I don't have to listen to you, I can take care of stuff. And that vibe kind of starts to go away as is it Mac or Mark Waters took over. And like by the time you get to 3, it's more of just like the A team where it's like, OK, like we just need to get stuff done. It's the other world. Let's do it. So you lose that sort of like teehiness, for lack of a better phrase, that was so, so integral to the first ones, like feeling like you were really saving the universe and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, that is something I always noticed, like the first one, like humans, like, you know, their footprint in the universe with the other species and in the Citadel, like they're still so like, you know, quote unquote, like new to that experience. Like, so like that is part of the whole plot, like the idea of like Shepard becoming a Spectre and everything. It's just like unheard of. And so it was just like there was just a lot of like, you know, the world building behind all of that. And like, you know, some of the side like content, like some of the comics and stories they did kind of touched on a lot of that too. But I do like remember like when 2 and 3, like even though they took place, you know, later on, even if it's X number of years, like just a handful of years wouldn't change necessarily that same idea of like humans being like new to this like alien universe with all these other like species and things like that. Some of that just kind of lost its like weight, you know, which it wasn't necessarily like a huge like aspect per se. I mean, obviously like the what Shepard did in the first game and unraveling like this whole like looming threat and the impending danger and being able to ultimately like save the universe and all that stuff, like that, you know, makes up some stakes and proves for humanity like, hey, look, we belong here type of thing. Like that's the point, but still like the weight of it and the way it's discussed in like kind of like, you know, hushed whispers by like the passerbys versus like where it goes like in the later games, it's kind of a, it kind of changes, kind of a little interesting diminished return there.
Yeah, and it's also Drew Karpyshyn. That's his name.
That's right. Yeah, and then it was after yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, I love that. Those Mass Effect games. Now I want to finish that 3. And what's so weird is that when I was replaying them, I literally made the same Shepard and made like the same choices essentially. Like it's still just like my picks and, you know, my version of the story. I didn't like try and do like a renegade run or do anything differently to mix it up or anything. I just essentially played through it with like really similar or the same choices from my original playthroughs.
Yeah. Like I would say like I tried when I got to the PS3 version, I was like, all right, I'll play Mail Shep for once. I'll do Renegade. I think I got like an hour in and I just couldn't do Renegade anymore. I'm like, no, I'm a good guy. Let's not do this. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. It doesn't work that way for me. Cool. Well, thanks for answering that. That's kind of it. That's the format of the podcast. We answer the one question and we kind of move on from there. So, we'll wrap this here. I didn't ask actually at the top, do you have, like beyond like the website, is there any like social media accounts you want to plug, or is there ways that people can kind of, find you online beyond, just the website itself?
Actually, if you go to the website, I've got most of the social links there. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Blue Sky, and a couple other ones, but most of the other ones don't really get updated that much just because there's not really traffic there. But like Facebook and Twitter and then the website are easily the easiest ways to reach me. And plus I do have my own Discord channel too, so you can just reach that from the website as well.
Cool. Well, definitely everybody check that out. Jason's a rad guy, so appreciate you being on the episode, Jason, and we will hear you in future episodes for sure.
All right, sounds good.
Welcome back. We've got a now returning guest. He's one of our newer friends of the show. We've got Luis here, who is going to help continue having some great discussions with y'all, and hopefully you enjoy what you hear today. Do you have anything that you wanted to maybe share that you've got coming up that maybe we can look forward to that you wanted to share? And if not, maybe we'll just jump into an icebreaker. But I'd love to hear if you have got anything else you want to kind of like maybe plug or share beyond, like I said, I'll have the, I usually do it for all my guests, but I'll have the, in the show notes, like links to your social medias and the websites and all stuff that you typically post your content on. But if there's something else that, out there as well, like let us know. But beyond that, once you answer that, I'd love to hear from you. What game character would you be friends with growing up?
All right. So just to start, so yeah, I'm Luis Aguas-Vivas. I'm a game critic. Pop Matters is where you're going to find a lot of my stuff. I guess I didn't say that. I didn't state this last time. I also have a blog called Aguas Points, which I run not like small reviews here and there, but then I also have an ongoing series where I interview YouTubers, specifically people who discuss games. So I've interviewed Janice Stiebler and a few other homies that I have there. It's ongoing. So definitely, if you want to see, just periodically, I'll like post like something. We usually get to talk about some pretty serious stuff regarding like creating video, as they call it, content right now, regarding like video games on YouTube. Yeah, and stuff going on. Not sure when this is airing. I mean, but you know, you can. I'll be on in the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo coming up, so I'm certain there's going to be a video of that. If this airs afterwards, I'm going to be doing a panel with Tim Rogers of Action Button and Jordan Miner of PC Mag, who's also who also wrote a book last year called Video Game of the Year.
It's an apt title for our episode. Yeah,
it's a great. I mean, it's a great book. I highly recommend it. Yeah, it's really good. I guess to answer your question, a game character that I would be friends with as a child.
Yeah. Well, I'm always curious to see the answer here, because it's, are you going to pick somebody who's similar in personality to you? You're going to pick somebody who you think would just be entertaining to be around? Like, who knows what your choice here is going to be? So, yeah, I'm curious to know.
I don't know. I was, you know, as a child, you know, one is a lot of things. I guess specifically to me, definitely I was very shy, very introspective, but then, you know, I was also a moron, like we all were, so easily susceptible to, you know, to what we consider cool at the time. So it's like, what angle do I want to go with? So I would say it would probably be, just in all honesty, it would probably have to be like a Pokemon. So now the question is, what Pokemon would I want? Now, would that be a reciprocal relationship, or is it similar to like how a lot of people just have pets here as like a, you know, it's like a glorified like living accessory? I don't know. I'll let the viewers, the listeners decide, you know, about that. But I would say at that time, because now my taste in Pokemon have changed, but like, what's my favorite Pokemon back then? It'll probably be something super basic and underwhelming, like a Charizard or a Scyther. But just to be fun, I would say Muk. Yeah, one of the first 150 Pokemon, Muk. Yeah, that would be the one. Because I know it's kind of tough looking, but kind of like smelly. So I can probably get a lot of stuff from that. Like people that I don't want them to talk to me won't talk to me. And I can use, obviously, as we all will at that point, use our Pokemon for evil to attack, you know, our enemies. And I think Muk is a pretty good way of dispatching, you know, one's enemies, just by hopefully he just like goes over them and suffocates them with its stench. So yep, Muk.
It's using some thought out, you know, strategies and tactics there. Okay, I like that. Right on. Well, yeah, I will make sure we put the blog link in the show description as well, so people can find you and read up on some of your back content there too. That sounds really cool. But all right, let's get into the bulk of the episode then. This is a question, this is an evergreen one that I love asking. I think, I don't know how many episodes we've done so far where we've been able to ask this, but it always brings up like really cool answers. But what is a game you consider one of the greatest of all times? So it does not have to be like a quote unquote, like, you know, critics' choice of like, you know, unanimous decision worldwide. This is just you. What is a game you consider one of the greatest of all time? So I'd love to hear that, Luis, and go ahead and share.
I mean, there's only one right answer to this. I mean, I don't know what other people have been saying. I don't know what people have been feeding each other throughout the years, you know, but there's only one greatest video game of all time, and that's Namco's 2002 Mr. Drill. Drillland. That's it. That's the only game in my book that deserves to be called the greatest game of all time.
Wow. Now,
a lot of listeners are probably like, what? one is like, what the hell is he talking about? And then two, it's like, wait, why is this the greatest game of all time? If they listen to a previous episode where I said that I like carnival settings, well, it's a game that takes place in essentially a carnival that has like different ways of playing Mr. Driller. So for those not familiar, Mr. Driller essentially is a spinoff, I guess, of Dig Dug. I guess it's probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I did some research when I was doing my 32-bit library, the Namco volume. And it's like in lore, he's like the child of the original Dig Dug and another character. Like it's crazy. I forget the name of the mother character, but she's from another Namco game. Like I'm completely blanking on it right now. I'll have to look it up afterwards. But yes, there is a parent relationship and a parent connection to the Dig Dug franchise with Mr. Driller.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, to the original character from Dig Dug's actually in this game as well as like a playable character. So you have different characters you can play with. Each of them have specific. They change gameplay slightly. Like one can be, they can dig faster. Others have, I guess, more. Not necessarily more lives, but they have more resistance. So what you're doing is you're essentially digging down to try to get to a specific destination. But as you're drilling, you're essentially destroying blocks, and blocks are falling. And if you get a match of four blocks or more, that whole stack essentially disappears. So it creates like this chain reaction to it. But in the same time, you have to dodge incoming blocks and also you have to get there at a specific time because you have a oxygen meter, which is usually linked, depending on like how you're playing, it's usually linked also to your ability to dig. So every time let's say you dig through one block, you destroy one block, that takes out one oxygen tank, but then also you can be timed, so it can get pretty difficult. The original version of this is actually an extremely difficult game, but they re-released it in 2020, I think, for almost every modern not including the PlayStation 5, and but almost every other like modern console that was there at the time. I mean, I recommend it on the Switch, I recommend it on the PC. It's really tough to beat a game that you can sit down and play however long whatever session you want, maybe 5 minutes to whatever, like your whole evening. And you're getting not only some of the best dexterity puzzles you can possibly play like in a game, but it's so charming. The soundtrack is just absolutely amazing, composed by Goshina. And it's a game that not only puts a smile on my face every time I play it, it's just also very funny. Like there's like a loose story around there where they go to this amusement park, which is the first underground amusement park, essentially, like where every ride is essentially you're digging underground. You try to fit in with the theme of the and the gameplay of the game, but it's so silly. It's really challenging if you want it to be. The new releases, you have the option of playing the old classic 2002 version all the way or the newer, the newer difficulty settings as well.
Yeah, they're entertaining games. It's like one of those puzzle games that like, you know, you think you've mastered the mechanics and idea of what it is when you just first pick up the controller, but that's when you start to see there is skill, there is strategy. Like you do have to know if you dig out like a big block or whatever, like the ceiling collapsing in the time that it takes there, and like knowing how to navigate. Like it's just, you know, you start scratching the itch and it just keeps getting like, it's, I guess that's, you know, how a good puzzle game is designed and plays. It keeps you kind of entertained and addicted to kind of get better and do one more round. And they're awesome. I've actually not played this new one that, or newer one that you're talking about. I've only played the original on the PlayStation. So I kind of want to maybe download this after the show and give it a shot.
I've seldom been as happy for somebody as you right now, because you're going to be able to experience Mr. Driller's True Land for the very first time. I remember the first time I played that game, you know, it was just, I just couldn't believe that there weren't more games like this. Just pick up and go, just really just, you know, I'm a simple man. You know, if you have colorful graphics, really engaging soundtrack, and just a game that I can, as the degenerate puzzle lover that I am, that I can just go into, you know, it's, you're gonna get a very high like review from me, highest marks ever. You know, this game definitely takes it to 11, you know, to quote one of the greatest rock bands of all time.
That's fun. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check this out. I see they also have a fun parody mode, the whole of Jiraga, the, you know, which is a play on their own Namco's own Tower of Jiraga series, which also has appeared in other Namco games. It's in Tales of Destiny. There's a hidden dungeon there that's called the same thing. But this is cool. I think it's a worthwhile purchase. I think that's definitely, I'm going to give it a shot. Thank you for this recommendation. I was not anticipating this to be your game at all. So you caught me by surprise.
Well, what did you think?
You know,
if you had to guess, or what the little you know of me, what would you say would be something that,
well,
I would pick?
Well, I mean, in my head, I'm thinking of just like, you know, like what are the things that like, you know, those big, you know, games, greatest of all time type things, you know, Chrono Trigger, or, you know, like for like, you know, because you mentioned before, like the Dragon Quest and everything. So I'm thinking like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe he's like an RPGs and all that stuff. So he's going to go something heavy, you know, like that. I personally have shared in the past, like Final Fantasy VII was one of my greatest games of all time as well. So, no, I was just thinking like the weight of like a heavy hitter, you know, per se, not to disparage the magic and majesty that is Mr. Driller Drill Land. It is definitely just one that caught me by surprise, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's the whole reason we do this and we have this conversation and everything. I think that's kind of exposing me to something new and fun to try, and that's really what I want. What is a game that you consider the greatest of all time, you know? So I love that you love this is cool. So I'm looking forward to trying it out myself.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you are going to experience the majesty of this game for the very first time.
What system did you originally play it on?
I played it on the GameCube when it came out. I played it in 2002. I had a imported GameCube.
Gotcha.
So I can play Japanese games on there.
Yeah, I'm seeing it is on some modern platforms. I can also snag.
I think it is, I know I said earlier that it's actually on everything at this point, because yeah, a year later, in 2001, they released it on all the other stuff. So it's on Xbox One, it's on PlayStation 5. So nobody has any excuse. And at the time of this recording, I think it's like less than $5 for the greatest video game of all time, for arguably the greatest work of art ever made. I mean, If you told me that I have a chance to either get a copy of Mr. Driller's Drill Land that I can play anytime, or the Mona Lisa, I'll grab the Mona Lisa, I'll dump it in the trash, and I'll take Mr. Driller's Drill Land.
There's the passion right there. All right.
Excellent.
Well, then I was thinking about what maybe I would share about a greatest of all time, and I'm trying to think of like maybe a puzzle game or one that I've like kind of loved in that same way. What could I say and share would be one of my games that I consider the greatest of all time? You know, like to kind of keep it, you know, in the era-ish of things, and this might be, I'm not going to say it's a stretch, no. I was highly entertained. I spent lots of time playing this. Choo Choo Rocket on the Dreamcast.
Oh.
Like, that's a game that, again, has like this concept, like much like when I first played, you know, the original Mr. Driller, like you play it and you're like, okay, I'm just going to send this, you know, mouse
over to the exit, and all, and he moves according to a straight line, and if he hits an obstacle, he'll always turn the same direction. Got it? And okay, so I'm just looking to see where I need to go. And then you start to throw in like the cats that are kind of like roaming through the level on their set paths and like the obstacles and stuff. But it just gets progressively like more and more challenging, but it doesn't involve like Twitch skills and like instant reaction speeds and like, you know, or like button mashing and like grinding and leveling up or anything. It's all like there is a solution to the board that you're looking at, like whether or not it's like apparent right there in your face or not, but there is a solution there. And so like the trial and error of like learning like when to go, what to do, where to like, you know, bounce off of and everything. And as that scales and grows, it just gets more and more intense. But yeah, on the Dreamcast, that was one that like, I don't remember why I originally even got it. I think it was just, I was able to get a couple of games at the time of me getting the Dreamcast. So like I just, for variety's sake, you know, I think I remember just kind of stumbling across it and being like, yeah, sure, I'll, you know, this looks fun. Like I'm looking for something different to try. I'll try this, and just super happy that I did. It had a similar to Mr. Driller. It did not end with just one title, but it actually did kind of continue on. There was a version even when I want to say it was on. Was it on Apple Arcade? It may have not been an official Apple Arcade release, but at least there was an iOS version. And when that first came out and was available on my phone, I probably, like, I don't spend a lot of time playing mobile games, like, outside of, like, currently playing, like, Marvel Snap. I play that, like, almost daily. But that is a weird anomaly. You know, I don't typically play a lot of mobile games, like, on my phone. I'll, like, prefer to actually play them on, like, a handheld system or, you know, at home or whatever. But I spent a lot of time with that iOS version of it as well, too, just because it did scratch that itch and kind of, like, you know, ran me back to where I was at again. And just that, you know, 99, 2000, 2001 era when the Dreamcast was, you know, had all of the potential and none of the looming danger and threat of the GameCube and Xbox coming and the PS2 dominance and everything. It was just exciting to be, you know, exposed to like unique and special games like that. And for like a really simple, like fun visuals, like nothing pushing the boundaries of like 3D design or anything at all whatsoever. It was just a fun game and a fun puzzle game. And yeah, Choo Choo Rocket was awesome.
No, it is awesome. And that's actually, it's a very notable game though, because it's, I think this is the first game for the Dreamcast that actually had the online play. So definitely, I know that I remember reading a long time ago an interview that Yuji Naka did, Yuji Naka being, you know, the director and producer of Choo Choo Rocket, and also even more notably, probably the most talented person to go to prison for insider trading. You know, this is he stated that it was a direct influence and how they learned how to use the online functionality of the Dreamcast and to better utilize it in games like Phantasy Star Online as well. You know, it's a great game. Yeah, I'm glad to hear you mention that. And I'm glad that Mr. Driller's Drillland let you, you know, to give praise to another game that deserves a lot of praise. And I was in a previous episode here where I was talking about, I mentioned Skies of Arcadia as a game that Sega definitely needs to re-release somehow. Choo Choo Rocket's another one as well.
Yeah, bring it
back. The world is ready, Sega. The world is ready. When Yuji Naka is out, I don't know if he's out of prison, you should commemorate it by also releasing Choo Choo Rocket.
Send in a couple mice to help them break him out. You know, I'm sure that he can train the mice to help like find something in like the cat-like guards of the prison. Obviously, he'll avoid, but I'm sure he can just use his skills.
Yeah, you can just call it. You can just do like a cheap tie-in to like the release of Yuji Naka out of prison and just be like Choo Choo Rocket, you know, and then subtitle whatever, like, you know, Naka's out or something like that. You know, be incredible. You'll sell at least 10,000 copies, Sega, at least.
I was gonna say at least tens of copies, maybe a little bit of a niche audience, but yeah, 10,000, sure, that's even more optimistic.
Yeah, you know, I try to be realistic when I can. It's important.
Thank you so much. This is a fun one again. So I appreciate your time, Luis. We love having you on the show. We will definitely recommend everybody to check out your blogs, the sites that you're at. I'll even share your social media handles in the show notes. But yeah, thanks for that dialogue. Thanks for a good episode. We'll go ahead and wrap here.